Most bankers aren't ready to help you until after their third cup of coffee. But with Central National Bank's after-hours service, you don't have to wait for the bank lobby to open to get help. You can contact us from 6 to 8:30 in the morning or from 5 to 10 in the evening, and we'll connect you to a real, live, local person who can answer questions and fix problems 7 days a week. Bank different. Bank Central. Central National Bank. Member FDIC.
This is a Rogue Media Network podcast. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How is your social battery right now? Are you drained, bursting with energy? It's at this level because maybe you don't have enough boundaries, less social in the winter. There can be many reasons. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you just need some more time alone. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. Therapy is helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself, and it isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/365 today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/365.
This is 365 Sports, powered by Sikkim365.com.
Chris Helmer, national college football writer, covers the transfer portal. If you cover college football, you have to. 247 Sports joins us on 365 Sports. Chris, how would you summarize the first three or so days, this early part of the spring window when it comes to the portal?
I think it's about as expected. It's not like a lot of big names, not a lot of significant pieces, but a lot of teams spring cleaning, and also some intriguing pieces that can help teams if you really dig in and know where to look. So not the most exciting, but certainly interesting if you're a college football nerd.
Where do you see Damian Martinez eventually ending up?
I had to put a bet on it, which thankfully I don't at this point. I think Miami is, I would point to Miami. I think Miami is probably the most likely. He's obviously got five official visits set up already, or four, I believe, at this point. But I think Miami's been the most likely all along for him. They get the last visit. They need a running back. They have a very strong NIL arm in addition to all that. So I think the Hurricanes are probably in the best space. But like I said, he's got a lot of visits to go. He's at Arizona right now, and you never know how that can change based on how those go.
Chris, how are you digesting what's going on with Deion in Colorado? We just mentioned a very talented Texas running back in Damian Martinez. There's another one out to McCaskill has hit the portal. Obviously didn't make much of a dent in Boulder, partly due to injury, but Cormani McClain gone, various others gone. How have you just sort of absorbed the attrition, and how do you see it from, I guess, the varying point of views and opinions that are out there about what's going on?
Well, I think it's fascinating. Colorado's, by the end of this cycle, it's probably going to have another 40 new scholarship players on their team in 2024. That's after last year when they had, I think, 70 new ones. So we've never really seen a team turn over a roster like this year after year. I guess if somebody's going to do something different, it'd be Deion Sanders. This is probably like a bit too in the weeds, but I think it's interesting. I think Colorado put together their roster a year ago with the knowledge that if they took a transfer, they couldn't transfer again. But the rules have changed over the past year, and now multi-time transfers are allowed to go back in the portal. And that's what we're seeing with Colorado. I think they've had 16 players go in since Tuesday, and 13 of them are multi-time transfers. So while I don't think this is a big deal for Colorado in terms of their starting 22, I will say this is a bigger deal than maybe Deion Sanders would say publicly, because this is key depth at places. These are players who could have helped Colorado. These are players that are have some continuity there. So from that perspective, I do think it's a more significant deal than some people might assume, but it's also an opportunity because now Deion Sanders can get out from under some takes that maybe they weren't huge fans of and can address some needs in the spring transfer portal window.
Chris, I don't know how you guys do it, those who cover the portal. I know there's a link, and I know that there's like you can see as they're filed, but it is, and it has been, even though it seems like it's been a little bit neutral so far, there's still 300 or so names. How do you do it? How do you keep up with it? Is it like that's what you do? Is there anything else that you get a chance to cover at this time, or do you have to just focus on that like a team or someone getting ready for the NFL draft?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just, I think this time of year, you just know that you don't get a lot of sleep and you're on the phone a lot. But it's what we all set up for. It's interesting. I don't think there's anything quite like it in sports, honestly. The transfer portal, we're annually seeing 3,500 FBS players move. And like 2,700 of them are scholarship players. So if you just think about it, you're talking about anywhere from 20 to 25% of the FBS moving every off season. And it's certainly exhausting. And it's exhausting not only for people in my position, but also the people in college football. But it's certainly fascinating and it drives a lot of interest. So just try to keep up the best you can.
Chris, which team could maybe surprise some people with their activity in the portal, like going and maybe being more aggressive than people would notice?
I think, like, at least in the spring window, so it's a little different in the spring versus the fall. In the winter. The winter is kind of a blank slate, you know what I mean? Like, everybody can be as aggressive as they choose to be. The spring window is more limited by numbers and what teams have available. But if I was going to point out some teams, I would point to the teams that have new head coaches, right? Like, especially the new head coaches who were caught in the wake of the Nick Saban change. So, like, Alabama really – like, Alabama is this roster you traditionally associate with just, like, top-tier recruits don't need to plug a lot of holes. Alabama has to plug holes right now. Washington, a team that saw their head coach leave for Alabama – has a ton of holes. They have to be very aggressive right now in filling them. And we're seeing Washington approach NIL in a way we haven't seen them do in the past. Like a school like Duke, I don't think anybody associates Duke, the academic prestige that they have, as particularly aggressive in the transfer portal. They're going to have to be. It's schools like that. There's always schools like Ole Miss or Miami that are always aggressive. But I think if you're looking for new teams to step into that kind of space, it's going to be those that had head coaching changes that have to fill holes.
Chris, is I guess the defensive tackle position, would you say that's the most premium pickup that everybody is looking for right now? Is there perhaps another one?
Yeah, it's I think defensive tackle is the most competitive for sure. It's just a lot of really big teams need a defensive tackle. I mean, just in the SEC alone, Oklahoma, Texas, Auburn, Navy, Georgia, LSU needs multiple defensive tackles. You could probably point to like A&M needs a defensive tackle. You could point to like half the SEC as needing a defensive tackle. And you haven't even gotten to teams like potentially USC, Oregon, Washington, who might need one. It's just a really competitive market. A lot of big Michigan needs a defensive tackle, or at least needs some depth there. There's just a lot of big time teams competing for a very small amount of large bodies. And that means that teams are going to have to be very aggressive in terms of landing one. And when I say aggressive in this era, it usually means from an NIL perspective.
I was going to say, yesterday we got the surprise, I guess, or I don't know how much of a surprise maybe for some, but Dominic Williams at TCU, and you go like, geez, like what a blow for TCU. But then, you know, the way you lay it out, I can only imagine what his DMs and the phone calls to, you know, whoever's repping him or whatever must look like. It's got to be just a really crazy situation for a 17, 18-year-old, but man, the demand must be just absolutely insane on the end of somebody like a Dominic Williams.
Yeah, we reported that Williams was going in the portal yesterday, and I don't think the person representing Dominic Williams is really complaining right now. I think they are embracing that, and I think that's very much what they wanted based on the Dominic Williams interactions with TCU over the years. I'm a very popular player in the portal and going to have a lot of options. And this is the time of year where, like, and I'm not saying this about Dominic Williams. I think Dominic Williams is one of the best players in the portal and one of the better DTs in the Big 12 the last 2 years. But, like, this is the time of year where, like, a very good player can command significant money. Mm-hmm. And even an average player can command quite a bit just because so many teams have needs.
It's shocking, right, that everyone needs defensive tackles even before the NIL and transfer portal. It's a position you could never have enough of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting because even teams that don't on the surface need defensive tackles want extra defensive tackles. Mm-hmm. Like, the reason why Georgia and Michigan have won national championships the last 3 years, and one of the reasons, obviously, I guess there's multiple, is because they could come out teams in waves along the defensive line. Like, Michigan lost Chris Jenkins this year, but they're going to have Mason Graham and I'm drawing a blank on the other defensive tackle's name, but they have two of the best defensive tackles in the country coming back. But what Michigan wants to do right now is supplement those two with an additional body. And every team could use an extra defensive tackle. And it becomes even more desperate kind of a situation for teams when they need starters. And teams like LSU right now actually legitimately need starting defensive tackles. So there's just a lot of motivated teams.
Do you think Cormani McClain will take any kind of negative hit on, you know, the fact that he didn't work out with Deion or any of that, or that will kind of be washed away by the fact that, you know, a year ago at this time, everybody was as excited about him as a prospect as you could be?
I don't know if he's going to take a hit because of his time with Deion. I guess it depends on how you look at that. I think the market for Cormani McClain will be more tepid than people expect, based on the name, for a variety of reasons. But I'm going to be very curious about where Cormani McClain ends up and where he goes from here. He's obviously one of the more talented cornerbacks, just naturally, that you'll see. But he's somebody that's going to be interesting to follow the rest of his career. Yeah, for sure. I'll be curious.
Chris, do you feel like we kind of hit the peak wave of whatever the spring window is going to look like? I know there's still spring games to go. So, like, here where we cover, Baylor's going to be done after Saturday. I'd imagine we'll start to hear some news on who might be heading out the door. Is it kind of what it is going to be, or do you feel like there could be perhaps some more big waves coming down the pipeline we just don't see yet in the spring window?
I think there's a possibility we see a couple more big names. There's certainly a couple guys that I'm still monitoring that would make some waves, but I've always thought, and I mean, we're definitely going to see a lot more players enter. I think as you see spring games come to a close, you'll start to see players enter the portal naturally. But I've always thought this would be a window where you would have maybe like 10 to 15 legitimate difference makers enter. And I think we're on track for that. Like, I don't think it's going to be a lot, but I think there are going to be some key pieces still left to go. And I think the real interesting day to follow is like the April 29th, April 30th range, because that's when really desperate teams are going to make last second pushes to push people into the portal. So I think there's going to be some interesting dates. I think next Monday we'll have a lot of players enter the portal because spring games have been over and compliance will enter them. And then I think that last, I guess, what would that be, Tuesday, will be an interesting day to follow as teams desperately kind of try to plug gaps.
Chris, when you get the name, you see the names enter the portal, how much or how often, let's say 1 out of 10 or whatever percentage it would be, do you already know they're entering the portal because of your contact with whoever's around them or even sometimes the player itself?
It depends on the situation. And I don't know every player who's going to go on the portal. I would be lying if I said I
sure
did, but, I spend a lot of time like ahead of the portal opening, just making phone calls and trading names with people. And, that's how you kind of get a sense of who might enter, and you just try to be as prepared as possible for the chaos. But, the names tend to get out there pretty quickly once they're officially in, so people get an idea of that pretty quickly.
Tell us about Ja'Kari Brown. I saw the post. We had it up yesterday on the show, and I know one of those that hangs around the Miami program who's been a huge donor, booster, whatever, was what was his name again?
Uncle Luke.
I know, but I'm what's that, Uncle Luke?
True Life Crew.
What kind of player is he? Obviously, they have Cam Ward. He moves on. Is he going to be one of the top quarterbacks that's now open in demand?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bad quarterback market. It's a really bad quarterback market. And I think Jakari Brown is by far the most intriguing name out there. I think he'll definitely have a level of interest from people. He's a former four-star recruit. He was pretty raw coming out of high school, at least in terms of passing development, but you really saw flashes from Miami. He's a really dynamic runner on top of that. And I think if you put him in the right system, like an RPO-based system, he could be really, really interesting for some teams. So I think so, yes. But even as I say that, like there's only really one school looking for a starter at quarterback in the Power Four. That's Northwestern, maybe UCLA. So Jakari Brown's interesting, but he's probably interesting in a way where he ends up somewhere as a notable, likely ends up somewhere as a notable backup and somebody who could potentially take over the starting role in 2025. This is not a situation where I'd expect him to end up as a starter at a big time school next year.
Last thing, there was that story a couple of weeks ago floated out about the next level of whatever they do. And there were some graphics about certain divisions or whatever. And I scoffed at that because it looks like some of those divisions are what we've had before of conferences that have been split up and people leaving specific conferences. What was your take on all that, that there would be this 70-team whatever?
Oh, the Super League? I mean, it's dead on arrival unless the SEC and the Big Ten are interested, and it doesn't seem like they are. Personally, I think it'd be very healthy for football. It's my personal opinion. I'm not a huge fan of where we're headed with two conferences really controlling everything and it being as jagged regionally as it is. And I think there was a lot of value in the way the old system works. I just think it needs to be managed better. Personally, I don't love Baylor and Texas being in different conferences. I don't think that's really what college football is about, but it's obviously turning into a different sport as we're talking about NIL on the phone and everything else. So I think it was an interesting idea. I don't think it's going to go anywhere.
I don't either. I appreciate your take. Appreciate your time, Chris. Appreciate you, what you do. It's Chris Hummer, 247 Sports, joins us here on this Thursday afternoon on 365 Sports.
This has been a Rogue Media Network production.